Welcome to the Scuttlebutt Radio Program with your hosts, Tom Claxton and Cal Walters. Radio for veterans by veterans. To get on the line, call 343-0106 now. A show for veterans by veterans.
Good evening, and thank you for joining us on the Scuttlebutt Network radio program, the voice of the veterans for the veterans, on 106.5 FM, firing the shots heard around the world at scuttlebuttnetwork.com. You're on board with Cal Walters and Tom Claxton, both veterans of the United States Marine Corps, and we thank you for joining us for the most important and entertaining show on the radio each week as we tackle the issues and concerns vital to the welfare of our nation's most neglected asset, the United States military veteran. And we've got an outstanding show coming up for you tonight, but we're going to start by thanking some of the sponsors that helped make the show possible. Right, Tom?
We certainly do. We'd like to thank the battleship USS Alabama, Memorial Park, Viva Medicare of Alabama, the law firm of Gardberg and Kimberly, Ed's Seafood is here, the official sponsor of Tom's Tirade, Patriot Roofing, and our guest in studio tonight, and Serenity Funeral Home and Gardens.
And, of course, we want to thank all our sponsors and you, our great listeners. We could not do this without your support, so please let them know that you heard it on the Scuttlebutt. And remember, SBN is all about giving our veterans a voice on the issues that are important to them, so you can always join in the discussion at 343-0106 or 866-983-2777. You can also check us out on the TuneIn app for your smartphone at FM Talk 106.5. And if you like to listen on demand, you can pick up our regularly aired programs via podcast on most of the major podcast sites. Just search Scuttlebutt or SBN. And if you like to listen to Tom's Tirade, get your blood pressure going on demand, there you go. You can check that out at castbox.com. Again, you can just search Scuttlebutt or SBN. And if you register, you can and subscribe. You'll get notifications when new material is uploaded. We're also on Facebook. Check us out there. You can also follow me on Twitter. It's at Cal_SBN. And if we can't get to everything, got a packed show for you tonight. If we can't get to everything or you'd like more information on the topics of the day, you can always check out the stack at scuttlebuttnetwork.com for more information. Later on the show, we'll be joined by Mr. Stephen Farley from Patriot Roofing. He'll probably be able to share some pretty timely information considering we just had Hurricane Michael blow through about how to take care of your roof and prep for something like that. We'll also give you the latest on the VA and the military sexual trauma claims, where they're going with that. Also, it's hard to believe, but veterans in many areas are sleeping in their cars at VA medical centers waiting for treatment.
That's unbelievable.
Well, yeah, but there's one group, we'll talk about it, there's one group that is trying to come up with a solution for our veterans. And a good story, at least a little heartwarming. The remains of one group of World War II airmen are finally coming home. It's remarkable that they're still able to
that's
to find
awesome.
Those.
Yes.
And later on, Tom's Tirade on The Gun is Civilization. It's a good one you don't want to miss. But first, speaking of Hurricane Michael, it devastated much of the Florida Panhandle, southeast Alabama, Georgia, even the Carolinas. And many of us have seen pictures of the destruction, and it's hard to believe when you look at pictures like that. But of course, in this area, we're no strangers to hurricane damage like that. And of course, we're hearing stories now of people trying to get back. I think the Mexico Beach area. They're finally letting folks back into that area. I don't know that there's much to come back to.
Well, there's nothing to go back to, Cal. That's the bad part about it. They don't have the power back up. They don't have water. They say they're getting a trickle of water. And if they're going to cook anything, they're going to have to do it with some kind, you know, propane or either charcoal or what have you. But at the same time, I would be wanting to get back down there and check on my, you know, what's left of what I used to have.
Well, and that's yeah,
that's,
I mean,
where they're at.
That's one of the challenges. And of course, that Mexico Beach area was hit very hard. Panama City was, but another one of the hard hit areas was Tyndall Air Force Base, and they are now saying, and they're, again, it's one of those situations where you had most of the families were evacuated from Tyndall. And they're now saying that many of those families may never return to Tyndall in the wake of the storm.
Well, Cal, they don't have anything to return to now. It's going to take years to put that complex back together, you know. I mean, they've got some runways, but even the runways are going to have to be fixed and maybe even recovered, you know, with asphalt or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But then, you know, they've had, what is it, how many houses? So figured there a while ago, 867 homes sustained damage on the base.
Yes, I think one of the initial estimates was that there was damage to every structure
that was
on the base. And of course, when you look at the homes that sustained damage, you know, those families have been basically shuttled off. They were moved to various other Air Force bases. Hurlburt Field, Eglin Air Force Base, Randolph Air Force in Texas.
Right.
I know there were stories that Keesler was at least opening its doors. I don't know if any of them made their way there. Of course, this is not, the Air Force is not entirely unfamiliar with this scenario because Keesler, you know, basically took a direct hit from Katrina in 2005. And they're saying that it will probably be a year before they'll see any significant recovery at Tyndall. But the Keesler took nearly 5 years. The recovery effort at Keesler took nearly 5 years. I don't think the damage was probably as bad at Keesler, although, you know, the Mississippi coast was devastated. But from the location of Tyndall, on the panhandle and where the storm hit, it's going to be a long recovery.
Oh, sure it is. But you know, when you consider the governmental procedure on letting contracts to work on any of those buildings or work on those homes or replace roofs or the interiors or whatever, I mean, it could take a year or more just to, you know, let a contract out for them to even get started on.
Well, and you've got, first of all, you've got to let the folks back on base, and they've started doing that today, and that will continue through October 21st. But families who evacuated before Michael will be allowed back onto the base to survey the damage and take away valuables. They can go back to their housing between the hours of 10 a.m. and 3 p.m., but they're not going to be able to remain on base. So, you know, this is really an evacuation refugee effort to relocate these families that are in the area or that were in the area. It might be a permanent change of station for most of the families that were there.
I would think so. And, you know, they flew out a lot of the planes out of there and moved them to other bases. But I understand, and we can't get a count on how many F-22s that are there that remained on base and how many of them were damaged and the severity of the damage.
Yeah, well, and it's somewhat humorous, but I was reading some stories today where they're saying, well, we're going to build some temporary hangars, and each hangar can fit two in there.
Of what?
Of the Raptors.
Oh, okay.
And I think they were going to build, you know, it was 14 to 16, and then he stepped back and said, but don't think because we're building 14 to 16 that it's seven or eight aircraft that were damaged. Don't take anything into that
yes,
number.
Right.
So, yeah, I think somebody. Well, from what I understand, from what I read, any of the F-22s or the aircraft that were there that were able to fly were evacuated. They were relocated. There were some that were in the process of being repaired that were not able to fly. But you're still talking about a multi-million-dollar aircraft.
Oh, yes.
And I heard...
Hey, let's not chump change down there,
baby. I heard one commentator, they were talking about the cost of the storm.
Right.
And that this one might be skewed because of the number of aircraft that were
right.
Damaged.
and we might not ever hear that figure.
Yeah, and you never know. Somebody might get their butt chewed on that one.
I would think.
Anyway, we're certainly thinking about those airmen and their families, and hopefully they'll all be able to get in and get out safely, and move on with their lives as they pick up the pieces there on the Florida Panhandle. Hey, on the other side of the break, we'll have Mr. Stephen Farley with Patriot Roofing. We'll talk with him when we return to the Scuttlebutt Network.
I am Gunnery Sergeant Hartman, your senior drill instructor. From now on, you will speak only when spoken to. And the first and last words out of your filthy sewers will be, sir. Do you maggots understand that?
Sir, yes, sir.
Can't hear you. Sound off like you got a pair.
Sir, yes, sir.
It's Scuttlebutt Radio with your hosts, Tom Claxton and Cal Walters. Radio for veterans by veterans. To get on the line, call 343-0106 now.
And welcome back to the Scuttlebutt Network radio program, the voice of the veterans for the veterans, transmitting live on 106.5 FM and firing the shots heard around the world at scuttlebuttnetwork.com. Our number is 343-0106 or 866-983-2777 to join in the discussion. You can also catch us on the TuneIn app for your smartphone and check us out on Facebook. You can also follow me on Twitter. It's at Cal_SBN, and it is a privilege to be joined by a veteran and patriot, Mr. Stephen Farley, with Patriot Roofing. Stephen, welcome to the Scuttlebutt Network.
Hey, thanks for having me.
And I'll tell you what, it's a pleasure to have you come on board here with us, especially with this kind of weather going on. And I see most of the roofing companies hightailing it out of town. They all headed to Florida. So from what I understand, you're not going to Florida.
Oh, no, not me. I've got too much going on here. I've got my own people I need to take care of.
Well, you got customers here that you've been dealing with over the years. How long have you been in business?
I've been doing this since 2007.
Okay. And,
yes, sir.
So that's a couple of years.
Couple.
Yeah. Well, Patriot Roofing, that covers a pretty deep spectrum when you just say roofing now. What do you specialize in?
Well, we specialize in residential roofing, asphalt shingles, but we do a little bit of everything.
You do a little bit, you do some commercial work and all as well.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
But let's get a little bit to this hurricane deal. Back over the years, I know I've had a couple of roofs put on my house because at my age, things wear out before I get a chance to get a new one. But I've noticed there's some different price shingles that are available on the market. And also now understand that we've got some different rules and regulations that you guys are having to work under.
Yes, sir.
So do we still see those cheap shingles, as I call them, or are the economical ones out there that go, 8, 9, 10-year stuff, or where are we at with that?
Well, I think it was 2012. They changed the standards, the code requirements, and basically we have the same as Miami. And you could get the cheaper shingles and, hope for the best. Now you have to have a 30-year shingle, or it's really the wind rating. And so there's a lot of new code requirements that we have to keep up with, so you can't really get away with the 15.
Well, the 30-year shingle, as you say, it's just a much better shingle. It's still an asphalt, or is it an asphalt and fiberglass impregnated? How does that work?
Yeah, so it's the thickness of the shingle, the strength of the shingle, that increases the wind rating. But we also have we have to re-nail the decking now. We have to do deck tape. We have to seal the perimeter of the roof. There's just a lot of
it's like painting a car. The biggest part of the work is getting the car ready for the paint.
Right. And,
so, So that's what you're having to do with your deck boards. And all now, do they have any specs on what kind of lumber that can be put on these roofs for that? I mean, is it you have to use one before it's sunk in the grooves? Or, you know, some houses had that. Some of them had 1x6 sunk in the grooves. But then I see a lot of plywood.
A lot of the older construction, like in Midtown, they still have the tongue and groove, but we don't. There's additional requirements even for that. You have to put ice and water over the whole house when it's the tongue and groove. But mostly, it's half inch plywood.
Half inch plywood.
Yes, sir.
Is it a special grade? It's not that perforated or that
the
mashed.
OSB.
Yeah, whatever they call that, glued together sawdust.
Yeah, we don't use any of that. I mean, we use 3 or 4 ply plywood on all of our redecks.
Okay. But now that is, are you running into different types of rules and regulations, say in the Gulf Shores, Ard Beach, Baldwin County versus Mobile, Dauphin Island and all? Or we basically have the same set of rules?
It's mostly the same set of rules. There are some of the cities who have different requirements, but you run into a lot of gray areas, so we do the same across the board because I don't want to get caught. You know, these lines can be pretty vague, and then I end up...
So you just do it to the best of your ability to start with, at whatever the most severe regulations that you would be running into.
Yeah, I do the highest code regulations across the board because I just don't want to be.
Well, the people's not going to have that much problem either.
No.
On these 30-year shingles, back in the day, they used to talk about the little tabs that glued the shingles down to each other.
Right.
Do these 30-year shingles, do they have more of these glue tabs on them? I mean, or do they have a strip all the way across? I've seen some of those.
Well, the biggest thing with the shingles now is 6 nails per shingle. That's code. Used to, you know, years ago, that was a selling point for us, is we do 6 nails per shingle when the code was I believe it was 4 back then.
Right.
But I've always done 6 nails per shingle. But now it's you have to.
Okay.
And you have to take photographs and submit it to the county. I mean, there's a lot to it.
I see a lot of nail guns, roofing nail guns.
Right.
What are people? A lot of people using those now?
That's pretty much standard now. We used to do a lot of hand drive.
Yeah,
but it's just more economical to get the.
Those nails or whatever they called it come out of those nail guns. I guess they meet the standards.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Now, when you go to put that roof on, can you put another? Say, can you put a 30-year roof on something that's been there for 15, 20 years now?
No,
on top used to
you could do a layover. Now you can't. You have to strip everything down. You have to prove to the county that you stripped everything down.
Ooh, so, you got to prove it.
Oh yeah, you got to take pictures with the permits. Some areas you have to email the pictures in. Some of them the inspector comes out and looks, but you have to make sure that you can prove that you took it all the way down the deck.
Is there a cost in relationship to getting those permits?
Oh, yeah. I mean, each city sets their own guidelines. I mean, I got a permit today. It was $200. In Sarah Lynn, we did a smaller permit. It was $450. I mean,
whoa.
Just
the difference in the communities?
They set their own standards.
So they do have some different standards, even as far as what they charge you to be able to legally do it.
Oh, yeah.
What if a guy gets caught doing his roof on the weekend, Saturday to Sunday, and he don't have a permit?
I would imagine it'd be pretty bad. I've never done that, and I don't take any chances like that. But,
no?
You can get fined, and you get all kind of stuff. I've heard.
I'm going to call the city and ask him one day, you know.
Call him and ask
just
him.
Just to see, just for the hell of it, to see what kind of law you would be breaking and what kind of fines that they would charge you on stuff like that.
Yes, sir.
Now, we see a lot of guys that have got some decent roofs, but we see sometimes that some of them have been applied in manners that's not 100% right.
Right.
Do you and your company, do y'all go in and fix just the leaks? I mean, if somebody calls and they got a leak, well, it's leaking around my chimney, or it's cheap leaking around my bedroom wall or something?
Oh yeah. We do a lot of repair work. I've got 4 or 5 crews that go around just doing repair work.
Just doing repair work?
Yes, sir.
I guess that's a big thing here on the coast.
It's huge, and I like to let people know that, you know, you can call us and we'll come out and fix the leak. We're not going to try to push a whole roof on every customer that calls us. I mean, I would rather someone be tickled with our repair and then tell their neighbor who actually needs a roof instead of me trying to talk to
someone. Okay, so if I got a leak and I call you, I'm not going to have to stand there and listen to 45 minutes and you try to sell me a damn roof.
Right, no, we don't do that.
Okay, I don't need all that. You know, but I need what I need, and most of the people now, and you know, we got a lot of retired people here on the coast that don't have fixed incomes. and they just can't absorb that money to be able to do all of that.
Yes, sir.
Okay, but
What about metal roofing?
We do metal roofing. Typically down on the beach, we do a lot of metal roofing, but most of the up here, it's more expensive. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people call me and they want to know the price and they think it looks nice. And once I explain to them, I mean, the cost is significant. The difference is significant. So it's really, if you're looking for just the aesthetics of it, most people don't really choose that.
Now, what about the durability and wind rating and all that metal versus...
It's much higher, and that's why it's popular down on the beach. I mean, you got screws holding the metal roofing down instead of nails. Yeah, it's there is a benefit, which is why it's so common on the beach.
Interesting.
Yep. But the metal roofing, from the looks of things over on the beach and there with Panama City and that area over there, looked like the metal roofs lasted, longer. But, hell, I don't know. There's no darn houses left there, so right. How do you know what kind of roof they have?
Right. I've been seeing it on the news, too, and I feel sorry for
that. Well, I'm proud to know that being a sponsor on this show, that, number one, we recommend you. You are a vet. You are a patriot, and your company's Patriot Roofing. And you're not running off to Mississippi to try to make an extra buck. That you're trying to establish a business here on the Gulf Coast in Mobile County and Baldwin County. So you're not going to be in Panama City trying to make $100,000 when we need to get our roof fixed.
We're correct. I'm going to be here. I'm trying to do everything that I can to be a significant feature here in my area. I don't want to, these fly-by-night guys who run off and...
No, just go make a dollar.
Yes, sir.
Now, yep. Do you as close as we are to, say, Jackson County, Mississippi, do you do any work in Mississippi?
I have. It's far. I cover all the way to Grand Bay and further and all the way to almost Pensacola. But we have done jobs in Mississippi. Okay. But
So if we have, because we do have listeners over in that area, so if they wanted to contact you, obviously I know with most of sort of contracting work, there is a travel expense if you are going a good distance.
Yes,
that
sir.
Is factored in. So, Stephen, it's been great to have you. Where can folks go for more information, phone number or website?
Yeah, we have a website, patriotllc.org, and we have a phone number. It's 251-270-1102.
Great. And Facebook? Do you guys do Facebook?
I do not.
Okay.
But
I'm not going to hold that against you.
No.
If I didn't have to do Facebook, I wouldn't do Facebook.
Yeah.
And Tom, Tom.
Oh, no. I'm not doing Facebook.
Can't tell you how many times we've had to reboot
Mark
Tom's
me
Facebook.
Off, baby.
Because
upside the head or something. I ain't doing Facebook.
Tom's doing that commercial where, his wall is his wall where he posts stuff.
That's
my Facebook. Got these tabs on
that's
the wall.
Me too.
Anyway, Stephen Farley with Patriot Roofing, we appreciate you joining us. Thanks for being a sponsor, and thanks for doing good for the folks here in South Alabama.
Yes, sir. I appreciate you having me.
Appreciate your service, too, brother.
Yes, sir.
Outstanding. Hey, on the other side of the break, the latest on military sexual assault claims and the VA. We'll talk about it when we return to the Scuttlebutt Network.
It's Scuttlebutt Radio with your hosts, Tom Claxton and Cal Walters. Radio for veterans by veterans. To get on the line, call 343-0106 now.
And welcome back, and thank you for joining us tonight on the Scuttlebutt Network radio program, a voice of the veterans for the veterans on 106.5 FM, firing the shots heard around the world at scuttlebuttnetwork.com. I'm Cal Walters here with Tom Claxton. We're glad that you've joined us to discuss the issues facing our veterans today. Our number is 343-0106 or 866-983-2777 to join in the discussion. You can check us out on Facebook. If you like to listen on demand, our regularly aired programs are up on most of the major podcasting sites. And you can pick up Tom's tirade at castbox.com. Just search Scuttlebutt or SBN. You can also follow me on Twitter. It's @Cal_SBN.
And we want to thank the folks that helped make this show possible. The Battleship USS Alabama Memorial Park. our sea lawyer, Colin Kimberly, and all his fine vet lawyers that are down there, and all the folks at the law firm of Godberg and Kimberly. And it takes a lot of people to take care of all that. Viva Medicare of Alabama, Patriot Roofing, and we certainly don't want to forget Serenity Funeral Homes and Gardens.
Absolutely. Find a group of sponsors, and it's not just folks that are helping to keep the show going, but they help out veterans and military and their family here in the local communities.
Right, right.
So we're proud to be partners with all of them. That, you know, Tom, military sexual trauma has been a hot button topic for many in the military and the veterans community over the last few years. Many have claimed that the military were not taking military sexual assault seriously. They were sweeping them under the rug. They also are saying many victims failed to report the cases to the command for various reasons. We have talked about that. You've done tirades on that.
Right.
However, over the last year, many of the services have reported an increase in the number of cases that have been brought to light. And recently, and a report from the VA Inspector General said that many of the cases over the last couple of years had been, well, they'd been denied, and maybe they were wrongly denied, but that nonetheless, that if your claim had been denied, that you might be able to have that reconsidered.
Right.
And just yesterday, there was a live webcast with the VA's new Undersecretary for Benefits, Paul R. Lawrence, said that the VA is going to begin reviewing tens of thousands of PTSD claims filed by veterans for military sexual trauma. And I mean, it said that number, Tom, it seems high when you consider that the Inspector General report, which was released in August, said that nearly half of denied MST or military sexual trauma related claims filed since 2017 were not properly processed by the VA,
and they just automatically declined them, I think.
Well, you know,
they didn't want to be bothered with it.
There were part of it, you know, some of it is the standard line that you get from the VA, that the folks weren't trained properly, or they didn't have the right people looking at the claims, or they didn't ask for proper evidence.
It's always something. It's always something.
The VA reported that it processed approximately 12,000 claims per year over the last 3 years for PTSD related to military sexual trauma. In fiscal year 2017, nearly 5,500 of those claims were denied. So if you look over the last 3 years, if they're saying, okay, 12,000 claims per year and nearly half of those were denied, then, yeah, you might have 18,000.
Well, right. But, you know, there's so many of the claims that they've denied just because guys and our gals have PTSD. But now, so, I mean, they just arbitrarily deny that because a lot of them don't understand what it is and how it works on our vets. But now they're just counseling out the PTSD related to MST. Because they definitely don't understand it.
Well, I think there's a lack of understanding. There's also some of this may go sort of hand in glove, or there's a cause and effect. You know, part of it is since you have or the theory is that these victims are reluctant to report their assault while they're in service for fear of repercussion
and I can
stigmatism,
understand that.
Whatever it might be.
Yeah.
The VA then has no service data to back up that PTSD claim. Unlike if you injure your knee or your shoulder, you go in there would be a trail of documents, and there would be a medical examination and treatment and everything else that would go along with that injury of the knee or shoulder or whatever it might be. And so I know, in speaking with the folks, you know, Nathan and Colin and others at Gardberg and Kimberly, where now they're taking into account other things that might have occurred that would go along with what the pattern might be for someone who has suffered a sexual assault, weight gain or weight loss or depression or all those things, you know, changes in your job performance that might be able to go towards the credibility of your claim, you know, in some of the same ways that, you know, Colin has explained to us. If you, you know, if you're trying to file a claim for something and you're trying to bolster your case, you know, you can get affidavits from people that you served with that may not be in your service record and it may not be in your medical service record, but it goes towards the validity of your claim. So it takes some of that information and puts some substantiation behind it from folks that served with you. So where does all this go? All military sexual trauma claims that were processed since fiscal year 2017 will be reviewed. And I would assume that may even include those that were that did receive an award, but maybe that award should be different.
That'd be neat. Okay.
And they will correct as necessary. They are also supposed to be retraining all of their claims processors on the proper way to process these claims.
Hoorah, about damn time.
And, well, you know, Tom, at one point, and I don't have that story in front of me, but I'm pretty sure as part of the Inspector General's report, part of it was that at one point they had specific reviewers that were trained to review these cases, and suddenly they pulled them out of that and sort of threw them into the general population. So, you know, one might wonder why they did that. Of course, there was a point in time where they were really trying to clear that claims backlog. So who knows if they pulled them out so that they could look at other cases to try to get rid of that.
Right.
They're also going to add increased auditing and review of all MST claims to make sure that they are processed according to the law. So from a veteran's perspective, if you have had a claim denied, if you're not working with somebody like a Colin Kimberly or Nathan Guin, or have someone representing you, you may want to take that denial and take it to them and let Colin handle it.
Right.
At least, if you've been denied a PTSD claim due to MST, you should contact the VA to double check that your claim will be reviewed and reconsidered. Now, you may think that's fine, you know, but I would contact a professional and say, hey, here's what's happened. I'm going to let them handle it.
Yeah, let them tell you yes or no, and let them tell you if you've waited too long or if you're still in the, you know.
Well, and I think that's part of this, Tom. And it doesn't specify it in this release, but I would think that time limit for appealing that denial is probably waived because of this.
I would hope so.
But I still would contact Colin or Nathan or somebody like that to be able to have them handle it, because they know the right way to make sure that it's being handled properly at the VA, which is the key. Because, you know, again, you know, you call up the VA and say, hey, I had my claim denied, PTSD related to MST, I had my claim denied, and I just want to make sure it's being reviewed. And you know, you may just get somebody, oh, well, yeah, it's one of those on the list. They're not, you know, they may not necessarily know how to track it to say, okay, it's in the hands of so-and-so and it's being looked at, versus having an attorney who's going to file some paperwork and follow up. But anyway, I mean, that's the latest on that situation. And who knows, Tom, in the future, it may get better because you have more people that are reporting these while they're in service. But again, you know, when you get into that he said, she said, then you get into trying to substantiate it with other pieces of evidence. And at least now the VA has acknowledged that it has a problem or had a problem.
Right. And that it is such a thing, you know?
Correct. Speaking of problems at the VA, and this is not necessarily one that falls squarely on the shoulders of the VA, Tom, but I thought it was an interesting side story. It's off of Fox News, but Many U.S. veterans are foregoing treatment at VA clinics due to the high cost of lodging in some areas, or they're sleeping in their car because of the high cost of hotels in the areas where they were being treated. But there are some groups that are trying to come up with a solution. But Billy Bryles, a retired Vietnam veteran, double Purple Heart awardee, said he slept in his car several times because of the high cost of hotels. Of course, he's Palo Alto, California, which, of course, you know, there's part of it there because you're in a high cost area.
Right.
Hotels can be $300 to $400 a night in that area. I mean, goodness, can't they get a Motel 6 in there? I mean, geez.
No.
They can't
afford to pay the taxes.
Yeah. But hey, that's okay. Everybody's gonna get free health care in California. So you'll just be able to walk down the street.
That's when they fall off of the edge of the earth.
Yeah. Oh no, everybody, Tom.
Oh, you know, yeah.
And
okay.
you'll be able to if you don't want to
no,
go here, just go
no.
There.
I'll pay for mine.
Yeah, there's a Yeah, there's a group, the Defenders Lodge. It's a public-private partnership between the VA and PenFed Foundation, raised $11 million in donations to fund the construction of lodges. Almost sounds like a Fisher House.
It does. Sure does. Yeah.
In many ways. But if it would enable you to be able to stay and not have to pay or sleep in your car so that you can – make sure you're going to be able to get your treatment. That's
awesome. Yes, it is.
So congratulations.
Neat.
There's more on that story in the stack. On the other side of the break, Tom's tirade on the gun is civilization. All that and more when we return to the Scuttlebutt Network.
Of the green beret, silver wings upon their chest. These are men, America's best. 100 men we'll test today, but only three win the Green Beret.
The following may not necessarily represent the views or opinions of this station, but they're coming around.
What is your major malfunction?
And now, the original pork-eating crusader,
Mr. Tom Claxton.
The discussion about gun control coming in the wake of the terrorist attack in San Bernardino, although entirely misplaced, but nonetheless thrust into the national psyche by the pulpit of the bully-in-chief, has driven me to examine a bit more about how the Second Amendment has affected our nation from its very founding. Along the way, I have discovered that some very astute observations that I would like to share with you here. The first is a commentary by Major L. Caudill, USMC retired, entitled, "The Gun is Civilization." I think it speaks volumes about who we are and where we have come from and who we will continue to be if we exist at all as a society. Human beings only have two ways to deal with one another, reason and force. If you want me to do something for you, you have a choice of either convincing me via argument or force me to do your bidding under threat of force. Every human interaction falls into one of these two categories without exception. Reason or force. That's it. In a truly moral and civilized society, people could exclusively interact through persuasion. Force has no place as a valid method of social interaction, and the only thing that removes force from the menu is the personal firearm. As paradoxical as it may sound to some, when I carry a gun, you cannot deal with me by force. You have to use reason and try to persuade me because I have a way to negate your threat or employment of your force. The gun is the only personal weapon that puts a 100-pound woman on equal footing with a 220-pound mugger, a 75-year-old retiree on equal footing with a 19-year-old gangbanger, and a single guy on equal footing with a carload of drunken guys with baseball bats. Isn't that the damn truth? The gun removes the disparity in physical strength, size, or numbers between a potential attacker and a defender. There are plenty of people who consider the gun as a source of bad force equations. They are the people who think that we'd be more civilized if all guns were removed by society, because a firearm makes it easy for an armed mugger to do his job. That, of course, is only true if the mugger's potential victims are mostly disarmed either by choice or by legislative fiat. It has no validity when most of the mugger's potential marks are armed. People who argue for the banning of arms ask for automatic rule by the young, the strong, and the many. And that's the exact opposite of a civilized society. A mugger, even an armed one, can only make a successful living in a society where the state has granted him a forced monopoly. Then there's the argument that the gun makes confrontational lethal and otherwise would only result in injury. This argument is fallacious in several ways. Without guns involved, confrontations are won by the physically superior party, inflicting overwhelming injury on the loser. People who think that fists, bats, or sticks, or stones don't constitute legal force watch too much TV, where people take beatings and come out of it with a bloodied lip at the worst. The fact that the gun makes lethal force easier works solely in favor of the weaker defender, not the stronger attacker. If both are armed, the field is level. The gun is the only weapon that's as lethal in the hands of an octogenarian as it is in the hands of a weightlifter. It simply wouldn't work as well as a force equalizer if it wasn't both lethal and easily employable. When I carry a gun, I don't do so because I'm looking for a fight, but because I'm looking to be left alone. The gun at my side means that I cannot be forced, only persuaded. I don't carry it because I'm afraid, but because it enables me to be unafraid. It doesn't limit the action of those who would interact with me through reason. Only the actions of those who would do so by force. It removes force from the equation, and that's why carrying a gun is a civilized act. Not a bad read and a perfect common sense approach to the debate. Taken to its logical conclusion, in fact, the greatest civilization is one where all citizens are equally armed and can only be persuaded, never forced. This is why our founding fathers understood all too well, having lived under the heavy hand of the British. But because they were armed, they were able to overcome and fight off their oppressors. Not because they had better diplomats or lawyers or a well-armed police force. No. They won because they had the weapons with which to overthrow England, which until that time had been known as the most formidable fighting force in the world. Yes, along the way there was much bloodshed on both sides. And as it was said, the tree of liberty must be refreshed from time to time with blood of patriots and tyrants. To say that we as a nation have forgotten this might be a bit of a stretch. Remember, the Japanese in World War II said that they would never invade the U.S. mainland because behind every blade of grass would be a patriot with a gun. I think that today, probably more so than at any time in our history, we should embrace the purpose of the Second Amendment and embrace an armed citizenry, at least an armed law-abiding citizenry. For not only is the gun an equalizer between force and reason, it does not discriminate due to political correctness. A dead terrorist is a dead terrorist, and the civilized gun speaks louder than the barbarian's knife any damn day. For the Scuttlebutt Network, this is Tom Claxton.
If you open the ball on these people, Mr. Nash, you must be prepared to go all the way. Because they won't give up the fight until one of you is dead.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago.
Where's your drill sergeant, men?
Sir!
So am I to understand that you men completed your training on your own?
That's the fact, Jack! That's the fact, Jack!
These are exactly the kind of men I want working on the Scuttlebutt Network.
Hey, welcome back to the Scuttlebutt Network radio program, a voice of the veterans for the veterans on 106.5 FM, streaming live at scuttlebuttnetwork.com. Along with Tom Claxton, I'm Cal Walters, a couple of Marines with just a little bit to say, the First Amendment right to say it and the fighting spirit to keep it. And real quick, the remains of the crew of the B-24 bomber named Heaven Can Wait, which went down March 11th, 1944. With 11 crew members, the wreckage of the plane was found in 200 feet of water off of the coast of Papua New Guinea. So those folks are going to be coming home, Tom.
That's awesome. And bring them all home, buddy.
Yeah, until they do. But anyway, that's going to bring us to the close of tonight's edition of the Scuttlebutt Network radio program, the voice of the veterans for the veterans. We thank you for listening, and I hope that you will join us again soon. Until we are back on the air, please keep our warriors in your prayers, especially those that are in harm's way. God be with them and their families. God bless America. Remember, hero is not a four-letter word. We'll catch you on the other side.
Hoorah!